Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
And the 9 o'clock news was brought to you this evening by Maria Kina's demented sense of humor. Yes, that's right. Maria Kina's demented sense of humor has brought you the news this evening at 9 o'clock. But by the way, Maria, I know you just went and lifted that clip just to make me blush.
No, it worked because I was doing election stuff about people voting, and it worked, and I hadn't used that story in a while. I promise.
And nobody, not even yourself, believes what you just said. Nobody believes that. You just did it to mock me while I'm standing here making me listen to myself.
It's not true.
Oh, it is true. That's why you're laughing so hard.
No,
yes, yes.
No.
And by the way, can I just tell you, in my life, I've been listening to Camo X since I was 4 years old.
Yes.
Okay?
Me too.
And in those years, I never once thought I'd hear these three words, fondling their feet, on Camo X. I never thought I would hear those three words used on 1120 Camo X, fondling their feet. Never thought I'd hear those words.
That's why I didn't look at your face the whole time I was doing the news, because I knew I was going to lose it.
My goodness.
Because I knew you were going to have a smirk on your face, and I had to get out of that newscast quickly.
I had far more than a smirk, I will assure you. Thank you so much, Maria Kina.
When are you leaving?
Well, you know, if you want a foot massage, you can head over to the mall. I hear they're free over there. At least for the ladies.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know that I would get the same service, but they're free for the ladies. Sign up early. Quantities are limited. By the way, welcome to At Your Service. I've got to somehow get control here and figure out what we were talking about here this evening. And John's calling in here, and I'm going to look to John to rescue me before I go into this break, because I have no idea what I'm talking about. Hey, John, welcome to Camo X.
Hi. Thanks, Brad.
Sure.
You're a great service to Camo X, buddy, Hank. And,
thank you.
The comment I want to make is that, okay, it seems like the United States has to regain the confidence of the Israeli people. And yet, we got the Secret Service or the FBI that had a deplorable example of security with President Trump being shot. It's just, I don't know. And then you have, I want to say McDonnell Douglas, but that's not the correct name.
Boeing.
Yes, sir. And they incur a $6 billion loss for a quarter. Granted, the strike probably made up 95% of that. But it just seems like we've gone awry, Brad. When I was a kid, there was a Senator Stuart Symington who was closely aligned with, at that time, McDonald. And I mean, things just ran smoothly. And now, how can we regain the trust of a foreign country when we can't even protect our own president?
Well, you know, there's a whole lot to unpack with that, John, but let me just start with one. I am one of my intense interests is in military technology. I follow everything that Boeing makes. I could tell you more than you wanted to know about the F-18, the F-15, the MQ-25, the F-4 Phantom, the YF-23 that didn't get picked instead of the F-35. It's just one of my interests. And I don't talk about that a lot on Camo X, but one of the things when you talk about Boeing and McDonnell Douglas and how things don't work the same, one very quick thing here, John, is that remember when we went to the moon?
Yes, sir.
What was the most important thing when we went to the moon? What was the most important thing?
I think to beat the Russians to the moon.
Exactly. And we went to the moon basically with a space capsule that had the computing power of your microwave oven. And we got to the moon, okay? Now, Boeing spent a decade building a space capsule that the first time it goes into space, it leaked, and the astronauts are still stranded on the International Space Station. What's the difference? Because in the 60s, when you talked about Stu Symington, and when America had the preeminent military power on the planet, and there was no question about it, we were concerned about getting the job done, not playing it safe. And today, we're more focused on playing it safe than we are about getting the job done. That's why you've got military aircraft that cost $100 million, and we can't even launch a rudimentary spacecraft into space because these companies have become risk averse. And that's a problem. And that doesn't answer all your questions, but that's the one that jumped to my mind because you so correctly nailed multiple issues. That's just one I wanted to weigh in on.
Okay, Brad. Thanks so much, buddy. And keep up the great work. You're really credit. I'm not kidding you.
Thank you.
And Maria, too. I mean, it's very refreshing. And I wish you the best of luck in your career, buddy.
Thank you, John. And I appreciate you calling in. I really do. And thanks for listening to Camel X.
Sure. Take care.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this Florissant cop situation. There was a police officer in Florissant who was apparently circulating nude photos when he would pull people over and for traffic stops. He was obtaining nude photos from their phones and then circulating them. But I want to talk about not just what happened, but also about the legal ramifications of how we use our phones today. Brad Young, at your service tonight. Stick around. We'll be back right after this. Back here with you here on Camel X at your service, Brad Young. With you this evening until 10 o'clock. Phone lines are open, and I'm going to be going through some topics. I've got about 47 topics left to cover between now and 10 o'clock, so we've got no shortage of stuff to talk about. But there's nothing better than talking to you. 314-436-7900, whatever you like. Open phone lines here this evening just to celebrate, you know, me get to coming back to at your service. But as I mentioned before the break, there was a Florissant cop. He wasn't named until today. But this Florissant police officer, basically, here's what he was doing. He was pulling people over, and there's at least seven known instances of this occurring. And multiple lawsuits have been filed. But here's what he was doing. He was pulling over predominantly attractive women. And when he pulled them over, he would ask them for their insurance. You know, you have to produce your insurance anytime you're pulled over. Well, how do so many people today, and predominantly younger people today, how do they have their insurance? It's not just younger people. I do this too. I've got an app, right? You've got an app for that. So if the cop comes, pulls you over and says, hey, I need to see your insurance, what are you going to do? You're going to open up your app because you're not going to have that silly piece of paper that your insurance company sends you once a year. You know, nobody's going to have that, right? You're going to lose it. It's never going to make it to your glove box in your car. It's gone. Somebody's going to use it for a napkin when they're eating nachos in the car and they spill goo all over the seats. You're going to grab that piece of paper and wipe it up, right? So they hand you your phone. Well, the cop in this situation, and there may be more than one that's been doing this, but the cop in Florissant would say, okay, I'll be right back. I need to go run your insurance to make sure it's still valid. So he would take these ladies' phones, walk back to his car. 5 minutes, 10 minutes would pass. And, you know, if you've ever been pulled over, as I have, I will be the first to admit I've been pulled over a lot of times. And it seems like they're back there for like 2 hours. What are you doing, taking a nap back there? So they come back. This cop in this instance would hand the phone back to the young lady who's driving the car and say, okay, ma'am, I'm going to let you go with a warning this time. Stop speeding and have a good day. Well, that's what happened to one particular lady until 6 months after she was pulled over. The FBI came and knocked at her door. Why is the FBI here? She said. Well, the FBI said, we found nude pictures of you floating around the internet, and we know where they're coming from. They're coming from a police officer in Florissant. So what was he doing? Here's what the cop was doing. He was taking the phone. He was going back to his car. He was then instantly going to the photographs of the photos in the phone, pulling up hopefully nude photos on the phone. And then he was using his own phone to take pictures. And then he was circulating them with all of his buddies. That's what he was doing. So this cop has been fired from Florissant. He no longer works there. He's being sued. There's going to be a lot of litigation because I just can't believe this is the only cop that is doing this. But here's the bottom line legally. Anytime that happens, you should never, and when I say never, I mean never, ever, never, never, ever, give your phone to a police officer. Now, listen, I respect cops. My dad was a volunteer firefighter, hung out with cops a lot. I've got some friends. One of my best friends is a cop. Okay, so I don't have any disrespect for cops, and I'm a big supporter of law and order. Not the TV show, but the reality law and order. But you shouldn't give your phone to police. Why? Because once you give up your phone, you're giving up literally every piece of private information that you have. And the police officer doesn't need a warrant, doesn't need a court order. They can just look through your phone and even, you know, pick out pics that you don't really want going around the internet. So if you get pulled over and your insurance card is only on your phone and you don't have a piece of paper, you can show the police officer your license and or your insurance card, your insurance app. Let the police officer take his phone out and photograph your phone, but never, never give up your phone to a police officer, folks, because at that point, you're just inviting trouble. I'm not inviting trouble. I'm inviting a great caller. Jan's calling in here this evening. Hey, Jan, welcome to Camo X.
Hi there, Brad. I want to tell you that if a cop pulled me over and looked for the nude pictures on my camera, he would be sorely, sorely disappointed.
Jan, I'm reading between the lines here, and I think I know exactly what you're saying, and that is funny.
Thank you. I love having you back on Camo X.
Thank you.
And so I would love to hear your opinion, please, and discussion about Amendment 3 to the Constitution, please.
Okay. Do you want to stick around for this, or do you want to have a discussion about it, or do you want to just hang up and listen? It's up to you.
Whatever you prefer.
Well, stick around. I'd much rather have a conversation. So,
okay, thank you.
So Amendment 3, for those who don't know, Amendment 3 is the amendment that would enshrine the right to an abortion in the state of Missouri and in the Missouri's Constitution. The problem that I've got lots of problems. First of all, I'm very pro-life. I'm very pro-life because of my faith, but I'm also very pro-life because of science. We always hear about follow the science. But right now, if you look at any fetus that's in the womb, that fetus not only has a heartbeat, has fingers and toes, but it has its own unique DNA. And so if we want to protect lives in Missouri, protect the oppressed and protect the folks who need help the most, there are none that need more help today than those in the womb in states that allow abortion. So I'm very adamantly against Amendment 3, knowing that it's probably going to pass anyway. But I just can't support something that enshrines the legality of murder. And if you look in Missouri, and it's particularly in the statutes of Missouri, if you're in an automobile accident and one of the parties to the automobile accident is a pregnant woman, and the pregnant woman and her child both die in the automobile accident, not only can you be sued for killing two people, but you can be criminally charged for killing two people under the laws of Missouri. So if it's valid under the laws of Missouri to treat a fetus as a human being, if that's valid in one area, why can it not be valid in another area? So all of a sudden, if there's an automobile accident, you're charged with murder. But if it's done by a person in a white coat in a medical facility at Planned Parenthood in the Central West End, then it's suddenly legal. That, to me, makes no sense. Jan, thanks for calling back in. What are your thoughts on Amendment 3?
Well, I adamantly agree with what you just said. You're dealing with two people. And I agree as a woman when people talk about my choice and the choice of women, et cetera, et cetera. I fully get that. I've had pregnancies that I've not been real tickled about at all. And nonetheless, we're still dealing with two people. We're not dealing just with a woman. I think the issue boils down to the rights of a woman or the rights of a baby, a human baby, as you just described. And it is, we wouldn't do this to a puppy. We wouldn't do it to even a goldfish, you know, and it's a human life. And I think it's just really abominable that in our country, in our culture, that we allow the killing of a human being like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't it ironic, Jan, that in this country, if you kill an eagle's egg, you go to federal prison. But if someone kills a fetus that has its own distinct DNA, not only is that allowed in so many states, but it's being championed in all 50 states. And to me, that's just irreconcilable.
And you know, too, Brad, today it was announced that our vice president was taking away the religious opportunity of people in the medical field to withhold their participation in abortions. That's beyond the pale.
Yeah, because what's the mantra of the pro-abortion crowd in this country, Jan? The mantra is the right to choose. The right to choose. We hear that every day. The right to choose. Well, what about the Catholic hospital's right to choose not to do abortion? So why is the right to choose only go in favor of death, but the right to choose never goes in favor of life? Why is that?
What about an evangelical Christian such as yourself, mm-hmm. RN, for instance, or tech working at Barnes Hospital where they do abortions? Wouldn't that person have a right to say no?
Well, they should. But if you're truly in favor of equal rights, Jan, you would say that the person who has a sincere religious objection to an abortion should not be forced to perform one. But that's why the left crowd in this country, when they use the right to choose, they only want certain people to choose and only in certain situations. They don't mean the right to choose when it comes to schools, because they're certainly not in favor of private schools or school choice. But they're only right to choose in very narrowly defined circumstances. And to me, it's really a stance that is really in favor of discrimination. Because my rights as a person who wants an abortion overcomes your rights as a Christian or as a Jew or as a Muslim who doesn't want to kill a child in the womb. My rights are more important than yours. And to me, that's a very dangerous argument to make.
Well, Brad, I really would love to hear your explanation, too, of the language in this amendment regarding the, quote, health of the mother.
Well,
reproductive rights, which some people, including myself, would determine that means the transsexual rights as well. And the fact that people want these issues dealt with without parental consent, mm-hmm. and paid for by us taxpayers.
Well, certainly I will tell you this, and I got to take a break here in just about a minute. But I will tell you this, Jan, I don't know the full impact of how this could impact transgender rights. I've not analyzed that. But what I have analyzed
is this. It says reproductive rights.
Correct.
And that is included with transsexual.
But it does absolutely apply in these two quick situations. Number one is that it would empower children to have abortions without parental consent, which to me is outrageous. A child can't drive a car, but they can go out and have an abortion when they're 14 or 15. That's outrageous. Okay. Secondly, yes. But secondly, the health and well-being of the mother is a phrase that is intentionally broad in order to encompass a woman's financial health and a woman's mental health. So if a woman in the ninth month, when the baby is ready to come down the birth canal, says, I don't think I can financially support this child, you could have a baby's life terminated literally minutes before that baby is born, up to the late term abortion. Regardless of what the left crowd tells you, that's what will happen. And I don't know of anyone, well, okay, I can't say that. The vast majority of reasonable-minded people are not in favor of late-term abortions, and yet Amendment 3 would allow that in Missouri.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Hey, I got to take a break here, but thanks so much for calling in. And especially thanks for listening to KMOX.
Thank you, Brad.
Bye. Hey, we're going to take a break here. More of your calls. I got lots of texts here I got to go through during the break. 314-436-7900. KMOX. Don't go away. I'll tell you who's going to be under pressure right now, and that's going to be the voters of Missouri trying to decide what to do with Amendment 3. And I just want to end this conversation before I move on to a different topic. I want to end with this part of analysis that I don't think you're really hearing anywhere. When I was in law school, one of the things, and we've all heard of this case, it is literally the worst Supreme Court decision in the history of our nation. I studied it in detail in law school. It's the Dred Scott case that was decided. The underlying case, the trial court case, was decided literally blocks from where I'm standing right now. And the circuit court, and was upheld by the Supreme Court, held that it was okay in this country. It's okay to treat people as property. People are not property. People are people. Certainly from my perspective as a Christian, we're made in God's image. But even if you want to take that part of the argument out of it, we're unique. We have a conscience. We have a soul. We are different. That we are different than cows. We are different from other animals, even from a non-spiritual perspective. We're different. And yet the Supreme Court of the United States in 1857 said that it's okay to treat people as property, reprehensible. And it's one of the worst decisions ever made by the U.S. Supreme Court, ever. And yet, isn't this idea of abortion the exact same idea that this human being with a separate DNA, with a heartbeat, with a mind, with a conscience, with a soul, we're treating that human being as property. And we're saying, it's okay. If I want to go out and I've got a cow and I want to slaughter that cow, I get to do that because cows are property. And yet, isn't abortion making the same mistake that the slave owners made in this country before the Civil War in treating people as property? And I hope, although I it literally is hope. If you're going to ask me what do I think is going to happen with Amendment 3, I'm very sure it's going to pass with big numbers, 55%, 56%. But that doesn't make it right. Just because a majority of people agree on something doesn't mean it's morally correct. And again, if you went to the 1830s in this country and took a poll of Americans, of white Americans, and said, is it okay to keep black slaves? I could guarantee you a vast majority of those people would say, yes, it's okay to keep black slaves as property. And even if a majority says it, they were wrong then. And the folks who look at people as property today are equally wrong today. Tell me I'm wrong. 314-436-7900. Moving on, one of the previous callers raised this issue about Amendment 3, about parents, about children who want to get abortions and so forth. But I got to tell you, the left in this country looks at parental authority as being invalid. And I'm not just making outrageous statements like somebody running for president oftentimes likes to make. I've got facts to back it up. Because, for example, a New Hampshire just came out today, a New Hampshire public school district allowed this radical trans group, LGBTQ group, to teach the staff of a public school district to teach the staff that a student's safety is, quote, jeopardized, unquote, when teachers share gender identity issues with the parents. That's what they're teaching the students in New Hampshire, teaching the teachers. So the school district is bringing in outside consultants to teach the teachers that it's improper and you're jeopardizing the health of the students if you allow the parents to know that a kid identifies as a different gender. Now, why on earth would they do that? Just ponder the ramifications of that position. The ramifications are crystal clear. And that is the school district and certainly the consultants from this LGBTQ group believe that it's that the school district knows more than the parents, that the school district is smarter than the parents, that the school district is wiser than the parents, and that the school district knows what's best for the children more than the parents do. That's the only philosophical rationale for training teachers to say it's not healthy and it jeopardizes the health and safety of the student if the parents know about transgender issues. But yet, isn't it that same mentality and that same philosophy that says we want 14-year-olds to be able to have abortions and not tell their parents? As if, like I said, I think in the last segment, you have to be 16 years old to go out and get a driver's license, but apparently if you're 14, you can have an abortion and your parents don't need to know about it. The only way you can achieve or arrive at that conclusion, that that's a good thing, that 14-year-olds should be able to have an abortion without their parents' consent or knowledge, the only way you get there is by saying the state knows more than the parents, that the state is wiser and smarter than the parents. And folks, I just don't believe that. I don't believe that a school knows more about the health and welfare of a child more than the parents do. I don't believe that. But apparently a lot of people do. So that's why I'm anticipating that Amendment 3 will pass. And I partly blame, as much as I blame the pro-life or the pro-abortion activists, I also blame Jefferson City politicians and the Republicans in Jefferson City for allowing this to happen. Why do I say that? Well, I do a lot of work in Jefferson City in my role as an attorney. And I know that there have been conversations in Jefferson City going back to at least 2018. That's the first I heard of it. So probably much before 2018. So for at least 6 years, there have been discussions in Jefferson City about amending the laws and the Constitution in Missouri that allows 50% plus one to amend and alter our Constitution. Think about in any other circumstance, you should have to have a supermajority of people to amend the Constitution. Look at the U.S. Constitution. You have to have 2/3 of the House of Representatives, 2/3 of the Senate, signed by the president, and then ratified by 3/4, 75% of all the states in order to change the U.S. Constitution. And yet for Missouri, it only takes 50% of the voters plus one to completely change the Missouri Constitution. I fault the Republicans in Jefferson City for allowing that to happen. They should have had the wisdom and forethought to say, we should have a constitutional amendment process that mirrors the constitutional amendment process of other states and even our nation by requiring a supermajority. But no, couldn't get their act together in Jefferson City, and that's why Amendment 3 is on the ballot. So as much as I don't like the fact that it's going to pass, I think Jefferson City has a lot to blame and carries a lot and shoulders a lot of the blame when this probably passes. Hey, we got to take our last break of the evening. We'll be back for the final segment here on At Your Service, KMOX. That was weird. I keep hearing my own voice tonight. It's really unsettling. When the sounder came in and said, "Hi, this is Brad Young. You're listening to KMOX." I'm like, "Wow, that was just totally random." So welcome to KMOX. Hey, I wanted to end the evening because we only have about 6 minutes left here. But one of the things we're seeing nationally and the trial, the individual's name is Daniel Penny. He is a former Marine. And you may recall last year he was riding the subway and a man was yelling and screaming and threatening both Mr. Perry or Penny and other people who were on this subway train in New York City. And what happened was, is this particular former Marine, Daniel Penny, grabbed the guy who was yelling and screaming and threatening himself and others, Jordan Neely, put him in a chokehold, and Mr. Neely passed away. And it's heartbreaking because, and there's no doubt that this individual had mental illness. He was known to police as someone who caused a lot of problems. In fact, I think I read today in the New York Post that he was on the top 50 list in the city of New York for people who live on the street that harass and basically threaten people on the street. Top 50 out of what? 15 million, 20 million? I mean, how many people live in New York City? 15, 20 million. So that's a big number. He was high on the list. But Daniel Penny is going, or Daniel Penny is actually on trial right now. The trial started today, I believe. And he's on trial for multiple things. First of all, he's on trial for murder. Secondly, he is on trial for recklessly causing Neely's death, reckless homicide, and criminally negligent homicide. And the jury's going to have to decide whether or not they agree that Penny disregarded what the law calls a substantial and unjustifiable risk of death when he restrained Jordan Neely for several minutes. Now, there's two things here that I think are going to make this case, even if he gets convicted, because it is New York City. We know how jurors decide things in New York City. Not a shock. But there are two things that I hope will be in Mr. Penny's favor. First of all, there's video. There's very clear video of the incident. So the jurors will be able to see exactly how this person, this homeless person, was threatening. He was threatening to kill people on the train. And that will demonstrate that Mr. Penny felt that, number one, his own life was in danger. And secondly, that the lives of others. There were children on this train. There were young girls on this train. And it can demonstrate that he was acting not only to save his own life, but was acting to save the lives of others. And, you know, there's a word for that. When you act in a way that you save the lives of others, we call those people heroes. But in New York City, they call them defendants. And so that will be going in Mr. Penny's favor because there is video. Secondly, on the witness list, when I checked it today, on the witness list for the trial for the defense is going to be many of those individuals who are on that train, including, I believe there was a 12-year-old girl who, according to reports in the New York press, said, "I was praying that the door would open because I thought I was going to die." That's what she said. And so when you look at that, you could see how the defendant, Daniel Penny, was not only concerned for his own life, but for the lives of others. Now, a lot has been made of the fact that Jordan Neely was homeless. He was he most certainly had mental health issues. And they're going to introduce that information at the trial for the purpose of showing that Daniel Penny should not have put Jordan Neely in a chokehold because this guy had mental problems. But keep in mind, Jordan Neely is not the one on trial. The one on trial is the defendant. And when you're talking about murder, there's something called mens rea. That's a Latin term for state of mind. So the question isn't the state of mind of the individual who passed away. We don't know his state of mind. He's no longer with us. The only state of mind that's relevant to this actual criminal charges is the state of mind of Daniel Penny. Just like, for example, let's look at the Missouri Castle Doctrine. If someone breaks into your home and the question isn't, is it a homeless person? Is there a crazy person? The question is, did you fear for your life? Yes or no. And if you did and you defend yourself, you do not go to jail. You don't do it. You don't get convicted. At least you shouldn't. That's the same concept, even though it's not the Castle Doctrine on this subway train in New York City, but the same analysis, the same perspective and viewpoint is what's relevant here. What did Daniel Penny think? What did that 12-year-old girl think? What did that mother who was also on the train, what did she think? And all of them thought the same thing, that their lives could end on that subway at that very moment, except a hero, Daniel Penny, stepped in, saved their lives, resolved the situation. Now, it wasn't a favorable situation, and I'm very sorry that Jordan Neely passed away. But when he threatens other people, threatened their lives, at that point, his own life was at risk, and those were the consequences of his actions. So as you follow this trial, as this trial moves forward in New York, think to yourself, when you hear the reporting from the mainstream media, are they reporting from the perspective of Daniel Penny because he's the one on trial, or are they reporting from the perspective of the decedent who had mental health issues in order to negatively influence you and the jury that Mr. Penny acted in disregard of another person's life? Brad Young, happy to be back here on Wednesday evenings. Hope to see you soon on KMOX.